Rule Matters. Now, here's Jake.
Hello, everybody. Welcome. Rule Matters. Jake Atzma with you in this holiday season between Christmas and New Year's. And I'm hoping everybody's doing great, because I am. It's wonderful to be here today. And before we get going, I'd love to get a thank and a shout out to our sponsor. And we're going to start off with Tim English, Tim English Realty. He is a Keller Williams Realtor affiliate. And you can find Tim at 154 Southwest Oak Street in Dallas, Oregon. And also, Tim is the father of 12. He is an ex-Marine, which makes him a current Marine, because you're always a Marine unless you really mess up. And his abilities to navigate all of the ups and downs of selling and buying your home or properties, Tim's your guy. And you can also phone him at 503-210-5750. It is a privilege this Christmas, New Year's time to bring on my dad, Gerben Atzma. My dad immigrated from Holland, and we're going to talk about that in the late 50s. But we're going to talk about things of the past and present and what we see going on today. Dad, it is so good to have you here.
It is so good to be here.
We've been talking about this for a while to have you on, Dad. And I thought it'd be special as we are in between Christmas and New Year's. Dad, a lot of people have no idea what things were like when you were young in, you know, the 1930s going into, you know, the 1944s. Dad, could you talk about what it was like, because we are a dairy family, what it was like your farm growing up as a young boy in your time?
Well, I should start here really then in the early 40s. The dairy where I was raised in, on the dairy of my dad, from my dad and mom, with many family members also. But we were milking about 25 cows, and we milked them by hand. And machinery was out of that would come later, but not at that time in the 40s.
So you milked your cows by hand, which, yeah, it was all manual labor. Wasn't a tractor in sight, was there, Dad?
No.
And Dad, so how many acres do you think was on your property back then?
About 59.
59 acres?
Yeah, 59, yeah, between 59 and 60 acres, yeah.
And then you were able, as a kid, as a family, you guys were able to market your milk and by milking by hand and so forth. How did that work?
Well, it would be, we don't forget those cows. There's so much different it is now. The cows were really almost members of the family. You could just walk up to them and you put the hobbles on them, otherwise they could walk away, and then you would milk them by hand, and then you would empty that in, I think, in 30-liter cans.
Sure, yeah, sure.
That's what we did, and then we get up, that would call us up at about, I think it's about 4:30 in the morning.
Yep, yep.
Oh, a little sooner, maybe a little earlier. But yeah, jongens, you would call in Dutch, you know, or in Frisian. Then, time to get up. Okay, yeah. Then we get up. We put the horse for the wagon with the cans on there and the milk buckets and so on. And then we took off in the pasture. And not always in the past, we had some small, also a small corral close to home.
Wonderful.
Wonderful, yeah, yeah.
Wow, Dad. So you and your brothers would milk your 20 cows, and so you had your little group, and they, divided it up every day, twice a day, right?
And you milked always the same cows, and the cows had all names, not numbers.
See, I didn't know that, because all the times that you and I visited, that they were docile, they were tame, because we couldn't get away with that later on. But you guys had names for them, and they were used to the contact that you had.
Yeah.
And so, you know, Dad, we were used to, when we were milking our cows, of course, way different feed. How many pounds of milk a day do you think your cows were doing when you were young?
Oh, I think between 7 and 8 liters. Yeah.
7 and 8 liters. Yeah. What do you think that is per pounds, Dad, or gallon?
Yeah. So in a liter, you know, a liter is 2 pounds.
Okay. So maybe 16 to 20 pounds a day.
Yeah.
But you guys, see, this is the thing I noticed about you and your brothers and stuff and the other Dutch people that I grew up with, you guys had such strong handshakes. And I mean, it was just such a byproduct of your hard work growing up.
We were milking each about 8 or 7 cows.
Yeah.
More like that. My dad, too, was a very good hand milker, even better than I was, really.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah, and even on mom's side of the family, too, they had cows as well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah. They were our neighbors too. You know, they were close to the Hedinger place.
Sure.
Yeah.
So, Dad, you know, it's such a different time. And while you were a young boy, growing up on the farm, there was also the Nazi occupation.
Yes.
Can you talk a little bit, Dad, what that felt like? Or did you really even notice it because you were so young? How was that growing up in your early years?
You did not, you know, we know that they had us, and they were fighting, I think, the Dutch and the German, for about 1 or 2 days, and then they start bombing Rotterdam in the middle of, and then he said, the next thing is Amsterdam.
Wow.
And so they signed a peace treaty, so to speak, that we stopped the war.
So the Dutch, you know, the Dutch
capitulated.
The officials of Holland realized they were over their head, Rotterdam was bad enough.
Yep.
And why risk having Amsterdam go down?
That's right.
So the Germans took over very quickly.
Rotterdam, they killed about 1,400 people, I think. It was getting over our head. Yeah.
So, Dad, what was it like then in your village in Friesland, which was the 11th province of Holland?
Yeah.
What was it like to see them around, the Germans? What did it feel like?
Oh, you know, see, don't forget, I was about 6 years old, you know, when the invasion, from the Germans. Thing was kind of normal, I would say, in the beginning, too. You know, hey, we did our work on a dairy. I was not too young yet, because I was only 6 years old. But things were still progressing, and people did their work. And the Germans at that time, I would say, in the 40s, they let several things still go ahead as much as normal as it could.
Okay, so they weren't trying to upset your way of life too much.
No, not so much, no.
What did they ask of you guys?
Well, I would say, you know, comply.
Yeah.
Comply with the regulation and the rules they want to have do. Don't go against them.
Don't go against them. No. What would be something that would have been against them, Dad?
Well, for instance, you know, pretty quick already, and you probably will relate also what that's in there for my uncles and in their assistants and things like that. Yeah, that they, you know, then you have the enemy, so to speak, against. You became the enemy against the Germans' occupation.
You know, we're gonna hit a little more on that later, but let's go back a little bit to your farm work, Dad. It was all by hand.
All by hand.
You didn't have the incredible alfalfa hay. You didn't have all of the incredible grain. What were you feeding the cows back then, Dad?
Just grass hay and silage.
Yeah,
we did silage and a little bit. Other material too, from refineries, from potato refineries. You could get the kind of, we call it fazels, and you would feed them to the cows, and also we had sugar beets.
Wow.
A foot energy.
Yep. And that's a great energy. We know that from when we were even running the farm too. Yeah. So Dad, you know, you would milk the cows in the morning, you and your brothers, and then?
We had breakfast.
Yep. And then what?
Then the work starts.
Then the work really started. And then where did you squeeze in school, Dad? How did that work?
Oh, well, see, I was not, you know, when I was still, you know, I would say I was not fully involved in the farming when I was, you know, between 6 and 10 years old.
Sure.
No, not at all. But that came later when you go off from, when you, or you graduated from the school, from the seven grades.
Yeah.
Then you were finally get involved in the farming work.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're talking to my dad, Gerben Atsma, and your dad, we're going to have some fun as we go through our segments. You're listening to Rural Matters, and this is Jake Atsma. And hang on, we're going to get into some fun things here as we continue right after this.
Rural Matters. Once again, here's Jake.
Welcome back, everybody. Rural Matters, Jake with you. Beautiful day, beautiful season. And before we get going, I want to thank our sponsor for this segment, and that's Lynn Benton Tractor, your local Kubota dealer. And they're off Highway 34 and 99E in Tangent. And I am so thankful for them, as all of our sponsors. Hey, Dad, you know, when we look at, you know, dairying today, the processing today, the big semi-trucks going down the roads with the milk to the various huge manufacturing places, you know, wherever they are. How did it work for you guys when you filled those cans up? Did you have to get them to the creamery every day? How did that work?
In the summertime, they were picked up twice a day. And they were, you know, during the warriors, we had no, you know, trucks, because they were not hardly in existence. And so they used an horse and a wagon, and then we put them down by the road, and then the man would pick them up and set them up there. Each cans, you know, we had a number 4, I still remember vividly. And so he would pick up, you know, five or six cans of our milk. It was warm milk. And then in probably an hour and a half, they would be going to the creamery.
Yeah. Isn't that something, though? I mean, you know, you think about it, you know, we had to have our milk cooled instantly, sent in our tank and constantly being stirred, which is fine in stainless steel.
Yeah.
And then, but here, you know, you milk the cows out at their body temperature and it got sent away that day and then to the processing near your village, and you guys would either do it by horse and cart or whatever, how they got picked out.
Yep.
It's something. It's such a different time. Dad, let's talk a little bit about, you know, I'm looking at the book.
Yeah.
And we want to talk about a little bit about the war.
Okay.
And World War II, and your uncle, William Santima.
Yeah.
And Dad, I'm looking here, just to give the folks as they listen to this, an accommodation from the President of the United States and has directed me to express to William Santima the gratitude and appreciation of the American people for gallant service in assisting the escape of Allied soldiers from the enemy. And this accommodation is signed by Dwight D. Eisenhower, the general of World War II. And I assume this was Harry Truman, because this is post-World War II, that did this in the aftermath of World War II, because so many people did so many things in World War II, and even your village in Friesland, part of Holland. So, Dad, why did Uncle Santima get this accommodation? Talk a little bit about his involvement, because we mentioned earlier you didn't want to cross the Germans, but you guys, your uncle felt like he had to do something.
My uncle Willem, he had a small dairy farm, but that was, he had more something else in his mind, that he became more in electricity. So he had a shop in Snake, where he would sell, you know, radios and television was not in the make yet, but all those what he could be sell. He was, you know, he went one time to Austria with another person, and then he found out already the environment of Germany, which he thought troubled him. Yeah.
So let's pause for a second. So this was before the war.
Yeah.
But he was sensing with like a lot of people with Hitler coming around after World War One, that we've got a problem brewing. Yeah. Okay. So Dad, with the, what year do you think roughly that would have been?
Just that could be in the 38, something like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Keep going.
And then of course the Nazis came in, you know, and he was one of the first, so to speak, who, you know, as much as he could hide himself, but try to help the special people, especially the Jews, to help them to have safety places, and also help Americans who were, you know, shot out by the Germans. And they still had a pretty good airplanes at this time for, and I still witnessed even that they were fighting, that they were shot at those big bombers, the B-27s.
Yeah.
Yeah. And some of them, some of those young guys, you know, they had to jump out because the airplane was disabled.
Yeah.
And it was so cold.
Yeah.
And and some of them didn't make it, but someone did make it. And the Germans, they sent them to the hospital, but and probably very afterwards, if they were healed up or conditioned again, they would send them to the prison camps. Yeah, but there also they some of them they would be they did not want to be voluntarily. So my uncle is try to get ways and means to send them to safe places, even to my uncle Gerben, that is I'm named after. And they would stay there as much as they can to find other places, and then they would maybe sometime go back to the Allied forces again. Some of them did.
You know, you have in Holland, you know, the North Sea separates England from Western Europe.
Yeah.
And so your uncle's farm was kind of off the beaten path, right?
Yeah.
It was a place where the Germans didn't want to go check out. So he could get away with some things. What were some of the things that were going on over there?
Well, see, during the we have the French's everything we have to blackened out.
Mm-hmm.
We even have we have to put black on our windows at night, so that the bombers from out of England, the Americans or the English, could not see where they were flying, or where they were in Germany, or they were in Holland. See, so everything was the lights were out and everything was dark. You know, that was, so.
Yeah. So, Dad, talk about what went on the farm there. Did he train? Was there any kind of training going on? Was there any kind of weapons in the facilities, or what do you know about what?
By my uncle Gurmey, yes, they had weapons.
Okay.
And the underground was also training, but the Americans who were there, they had that training already. Of course, you know, they were in the army, even the ones who were flying those bombers, and And the Jews, they were had a temporary place for safety, and then like I mentioned before, then they would send to other places.
So, Dad, how did we've got just a minute and a half? How did the Jews know to go to your place, or your uncle's place? So they spend the night in the barns? How did that work?
Say that again.
So, Dad, if the Jews, when they would come to the farm by your uncle, how did that work? Where did they stay?
They would stay as many as on my place from my Uncle Germa, but they could not keep them all there.
No. So
then they were directed there by somebody else, by my Uncle Willem and things like that. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. We're going to continue this part of the conversation here. You're listening to My Dad, Gerb and Atsma. We're talking about things long ago, but are still relevant and need to be talked about. And you're listening to Jake Atsma. This is Will Matters. We're going to be right back after the news. Stay with us for the second half of this program.
Rural Matters. Once again, here's Jake.
Welcome back. Jake, Rural Matters. And it's a pleasure to have you guys listening, and I'm so thankful for the people that help us pay the bills. And Brooks True Value Hardware is one of those folks. They're located at 5050 Brook Lake Road in Brooks for all your hardware needs. Beautiful place. Now selling Nitro Fix from Bonterra. You can call them at 503-393-1251, or you can look them up online at brookstruevaluehardware.com. Thank you guys so much. As we go forward, Dad, you know, we're talking about your uncle Willem Santema, and there was a book written about him because there's so much stuff that we can't even begin to talk about. So we need to just kind of highlight it. So for the folks that are just listening, your uncle was very active in the Dutch underground in Friesland, Snake, near where you grew up in Friesland. Yeah. And Dad, he would harbor shot down pilots. Jews also would be spend the night in a barn. Did you feed the Jewish folks there, Dad?
No,
did your uncle? What was the deal there? Did they spend the night and move on?
Well, yeah. See, my uncle German, the Germans had him also in the loop, so to speak.
So they were watching him.
They were watching him, so he has to almost hide himself.
Okay.
From the Germans, because they would incarcerate him if they would find out already that he was working against them. So my uncle was hardly ever at home. He went sometimes for places where were safe, where he knows those people.
So was this your Uncle Willem? Or
yeah, Uncle Willem.
Okay, yeah, keep going.
And I remember one time, because I was going to my Uncle Germ one time. I think it was on a Sunday, and Uncle Willem was there too. But I never saw any other people than Uncle Willem and my uncle, and I didn't see any other people there than just the people who worked for Uncle Gerben over there. Yeah.
Wow. You know, Dad, it's almost surreal to think about having this environment. I cannot fathom it.
No.
I really can't. So, Dad, what happened to Uncle Willem? What was, you know, for the sake of the program, talk a little bit what happened to him, and then we're going to talk about Uncle Gerben.
Unfortunately, you know, he did not feel safe anymore in Friesland. He got another name and another identification thing under a different name. He was going to go to a meeting with his uncle Willem's associates, and then somebody warned him, come on, don't go there. There is someone who knows, who told the Germans who were gathering there for, and then my uncle swung around, but they threw a bicycle in front of him, and then he arrested him.
Okay.
Yeah.
So let's.
And then they brought him later. You know that. Yeah. My uncle said already when he talked to my dad, Geert, so that was my dad's name.
Sure.
Don't do what I do. You have a family. Yeah, I still remember that my dad was saying.
It's brutal reality, Dad.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, ultimately, then what happened to Uncle William?
Uncle Kate, he was incarcerated in Scheveningen, and then they found out who that person was.
Yeah.
But boy, that was a big catch. And then he was incarcerated, and I think they almost, he was not treated very, very well over there. Okay. Tried to get information out of him
right.
under pressure and so on and so on. And later on, he was transported to Vught in another little town in southern Holland. This, and there was somebody else there too. They were incarcerated there also. I think about they had places the Germans that they would stay there, and so then later on I don't know how long. So he was incarcerated in February, in 1944. And he was executed in August, wow. 1944.
So yeah. Let's pause for a little, Dad, so we can get a little bit of clarity, so make sure everybody understands what's going on here. Let's back up a little bit, because you and I, as kids, we've talked about these stories. And even talking to you and Mom, I even find out more. I want to be clear to everybody that's listening. You and your family did not hate the Germans. I mean, per se, you are not about wanting to kill them or anything along those lines. But you did want to stand up for yourselves and do the right thing.
Yeah, and not all Germans were Nazis. Okay,
so
the Germans, although they were drafted, they had no choice of the matter, and so no, we could not say, but we I could not say we liked them too well. Because hey, what they did
was brutal,
you know, and so what I can tell you this one time, for instance, because the Germans get short on manpower in their factories, because all the young men were in the service, so they had they call it in my town a razzia. That would mean they would go from door to door and round up people who are below the 45 years of old, four 45 years, and. And I still see him there going, you know, to Snake. It's a little town, not too far from him is there. And they were sorted out. And some of them, they went to Germany and they went into the factories.
Yeah, so they would take your prime people, your prime guys.
Yeah.
And because stuff had to go on in Germany as well, even though things were starting to go bad, particularly in 1944.
Yeah.
And then you get that horrible winter of 44 going into 1945.
Got it.
So, Dad, I want to have you comment on this story.
Yep.
And tell me which uncle it was. Your uncle, I'm going to assume is Uncle Willem.
Yeah.
Saw a German drowning in a ditch canal. Was that Uncle Willem?
Yeah.
And he saved his life.
Oh yeah.
And didn't that matter at all when they arrested him later, that it was proven that he saved a German's life or what? Talk about that.
Yeah, it did not matter. They brought it up, you know, before he was, you know, so to speak, executed, to help him. Hey, he saved a German guy, you know, but see, that was also my Uncle Willem. No, you know, Even if a German was, if he did not have helped him, he would have drowned.
Yeah, he would.
He
have.
Would absolutely drown. But my uncle would be able to haul him out there. Yeah. So, but it did not matter. It did not. No.
Those were super super tough things to go through, Dad. So what I want to highlight here, because Uncle Willem, your Uncle Willem. Has a lot of accommodations, but we want to talk about this one, and that is a tree that is planted in Israel for what is called the righteous Gentiles. Dad, what does that mean?
They because of acknowledging how much doing for the Jewish people he rescued, that they planted the tree in Israel for my Uncle Willem. His name is on there, and also his birthday and execution day. My Uncle Willem was only 42.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, almost in the prime of his life, and he did so much.
Yeah.
And he would have been, you know, you talk about the radios and so forth, yeah, which were illegal, right? You could not have a radio in your house, could you?
You could have, but not, you could, yeah, right, yeah, we have to deliver them to the Germans.
Really?
Isn't that something?
Yeah. You had to give the radios because yeah, they didn't want you listening to what the BBC... But,
yeah. No, it was not. That was illegal.
I'm not trying to get away with that now. That would be like next to impossible.
But see, yeah, this was, I still remember, Jake, when I was visiting my uncle, Gerwin, who was living in more like in the field, not in the close community, then... And it was my uncle's birthday. It was in the winter time. My dad and me, we skated over there on ice skates.
Yeah, sure.
That's all. You could ice skate from since you are 5 years old, so to speak. That was the one thing you have to. We ice skated to school even then.
That's crazy.
Yeah,
cool.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, and, man.
Yeah, walk on clumping on wooden shoes, but also we could skate very well, too. Now, and then we had, it was my uncle's birthday, and so we went over that, was during the winter, and they were listening to the BBC. my uncle had the radio not deposited, so.
Wow, that's
And my nephew, Willem, who was also by the name of Willem, by the name of Willem, he wants to usher me out.
Yeah,
out
you didn't
of the
want
room.
Well, you don't want to hear anything because you don't know if you're going to get interrogated.
Yeah, yeah.
And so you, real quick before we close, and I'll say this, you and Mom had to learn to be quiet or not hear anything. Yeah. Because if you're walking to school and there's a German soldiers, they might want to say, hey, what's going on in your family?
Yeah.
A whole different dynamic. You're listening to Rural Matters, Jake with you, with my father, Gerben Atsma, reminiscing about years gone by, farm life, World War II life in Friesland, Holland, particularly Snake, where my dad and my mom grew up. Rural Matters, we'll be back with this final segment right after this. Hang on.
Rural Matters. Once again, here's Jake.
Back, everybody. Rural Matters, Jake with you. And, you know, being holiday season and all, I gotta give homage to our producer, Diamond David. Born Identity. Dave, so glad to have you working with me all the time. Appreciate it. And also, segment sponsor, and can't do it without our friends in Mount Angel, Schuyler Water Systems, located there in Mount Angel at 190 West Church Street in Mount Angel. You can phone them at 503-845-5225. And they are your Schuyler Water Systems, alternate well water system needs. Anything you need well-wise, these guys do it, and they're your local Connecticut dealers, and they've been with me since day one. Thank you, Shiloh Waters. Dad, we're going to switch to different uncle now, Uncle Gerben.
Yep.
Uncle Gerben comes from which side of the family, Dad? And talk a little bit about what his involvement in the war was about, if you can.
Well, more like a place, you know, he was my, of course, brother of my... That my father Geert.
Yep.
And so he in that way he lives in, not in a close community, but more, I would say we call it the field of in a grassy land all around. There was no neighbors there, and so it was a safe place for people. You know what I mentioned before already, for people who were, you know, being persecuted. And but they could not always stay there. It was more like a place where people would go and also find other areas where they would be safe and transported to other safe houses, because they can only have so many people at one place.
So they, Dad, you know, you take a big risk,
yeah,
in doing this, because yeah, somebody's going to snitch on you.
Yeah.
And so, like, even you and Mom on your side, didn't you guys also have, you would have people spend the night in your barns and stuff, you know, on occasion, or did I hear that wrong?
No, we did not.
Okay.
We have people from the southern part, you know, who are really deprived of the necessity of daily lives, for instance, food.
Right.
We had a young man, his dad was a Jew. And he came from Amsterdam, and his name was, I still vividly remember, his name was Benno, and he stayed with us at least, I think, a half year or something.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
He was just with you guys.
Yeah, he was with these guys.
Yeah.
We were a family.
Tell everybody how. Yeah, you had, it wasn't, you guys were the Brady Bunch plus one. Dad, so talk a little bit about Uncle Gurman, what he did, and then what happened to him.
He was just like you mentioned too already. He was rewarded, you know, what he had done already. And he just, afterwards, he was keep on daring and thing like that until he had reached retirement age. He did not become very old. I remember that. Because when I went for the first time back from the United States to Holland, the first trip back, he was gone already. Yeah, that was a little sad.
So, Dad, when you and your brothers would see German soldiers, or you got any kind of like stories of inner kind of interactions yourself with them at all, or what did you see? They pretty much stayed away from you.
Oh yeah. We saw what I still remember, and I still they practiced even on our farm one time with submachine guns, but they call it how come, Jake?
That's okay, Dad. Submachine guns are fine.
Machine guns. They had machine guns there, but with blanks.
Yeah, okay, sure.
Yep. Oh yeah.
And they would target.
Yeah, I was targeting them, and they had much fun too.
Well, that's good because you had your cows out there also. So
right.
I wonder what they thought of that. Yeah. Well, they were so good with that. You know, Dad. We just got done with Christmas. Talk briefly about what Christmas was like for you as a young boy.
Oh, yeah. No, we went to a first place where people would gather for other activities, and we drank all chocolate milk.
Yeah.
As much as we could for about a half hour or so. And then from that place, we went ushered into the church. And then we had the story of Christmas was there. The pastor was involved, and the congregation was there. And it was still meaningful. The candles were all light. That did not interfere with the occupation.
So, Dad, but Holland has the December 5th, which is right. They call it the Sinterklaas day.
Yes.
And then the regular church celebration was actually on Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, right?
Yeah.
So what kind of present would you get for as a kid? Did you even have anything with the war and all that?
Not too much. In the beginning, it was okay. See, but everything getting less and less and less. The factories were almost closed or bumped. Jake, it is such a strange thing that we would see, the bombers flying over, just straight over Friesland, all the way from England to Germany, and they bumped Dresden or Berlin, I don't know. But all the factories. And also a group will do it during the daytime, and also a group of either with Americans at night.
So
yeah,
you could hear that.
They could hear that.
It's incredible. And Dad, a bomb actually missed and hit your farm.
Yeah.
Talk about that real quick, Dad.
That was something unexpectedly. We heard a plane flying over a little bit, and he also had some flares in the sky.
Sure.
So illuminated the whole area.
Yeah.
And then, all of a sudden, a bomb came there, and just missed the shrapnel. My mom, about four feet. My mom was standing in the door there, and a piece of shrapnel went right in the wall, just about three or 4 feet from her.
Yeah.
But we did not see that right away. But then, and I found a piece of shrapnel also in a house in our living rooms, as a horseshoe, a real wicket. I still remember that.
And
pretty big.
Yeah, and miraculously by God's
grace, nobody get hurt.
Yeah, and that
nobody get hurt.
You know,
all the windows were out of the house for us. blown out.
What did you guys do for windows then, Dad? I mean, it's not like you could go down to the hardware store.
No, we cannot. We found doors and all of what was loose. We hammered them. Yes, otherwise, it would get so cold, too.
Oh, my gosh, Dad. Man, it's crazy.
It was crazy, but yeah. I still remember people from... on that Sunday afternoon, we were all looking at our place.
Well, you guys were a bit of a novelty terrible way, really. Oh. But in a sense, though, that...
I still do not... I cannot still, you know, comprehend of why did he drop a bomb over there? I'm still puzzled with the thing, yeah.
Well, you know, Dad, that wasn't the only time, too. And I'm going to share this story because for the end of the program, and that is that you and Mom talk about the time that the Allies were bombing a German supply line, and it hit coffee beans. There was coffee beans. Yeah. And so that got blown all over the ditches and everything. Yeah. And the parents, you guys were just, you know, we take coffee for granted, yeah. Although I don't, Dad. I love coffee. Yeah. But you guys... gathered up, the gals grabbed their aprons and gathered
even
up
all, my mother.
Yeah, Mom mother. Did, and gathered those beans, yep. And collected all of them, and then you guys always walked to school, and then the next day, everybody ground up those beans. You could smell the coffee out of the windows, right, Dad?
Yep.
Isn't that something? Yep. Crazy stuff like that. I mean, it's amazing.
Unfortunately, we did not share them. We did because my mom lived on a different part of our village.
So you didn't get coffee?
No,
you got ripped off,
so.
Dad. No, That's too bad. Yeah. That's too bad. We've got real quick, Dad. Less than 30 seconds. God was through and lived and took care of you guys, did he not?
Absolutely, absolutely.
You always had plenty of food to eat, Dad.
All the time. We had a big garden, and we have to work pretty hard, even as a young kid. I did, you know, pulling the string beans and this and that, but we had plenty of food, potatoes. We grew our own potatoes, all of needed for a family to survive during those critical years.
It's an amazing time, Dad. You're listening to my father, Gerben Atsma. This is Jake Roll Matters in this Advent, New Year time. God bless, and we'll talk to you guys soon again.
Rural Matters on 1430 KYKN, where Salem is listening.